Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Welcome to the Happy Hour Garage, featuring a duo of racing gals who live for the thunder of horsepower, the smell of high-octane fuel, and burning rubber at 200 miles an hour. They believe a day at the Speedway is like a day at the spa. Together, they bring you NASCAR news and interviews and get you ready for the races each week. And now, here's your hosts, Shannon Yoakum and Maureen Kelly from the Happy Hour Garage.
Helen, start your engine.
Hey, good afternoon. Happy Friday. This is Shannon, your host of the Happy Hour Garage up in beautiful British Columbia. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I know you're going to love this show today. Our next guest is the daughter of J.D. McDuffie. Her name is Linda. She has got lots to talk about her dad, and I can hardly wait to hear about him. He competed in the Winston Cup Series from 63 to 91, and then was tragically killed at Watkins Glen. J.D. to me is epitome of the kind of racer I like. Didn't necessarily grab a lot of checkered flags. Matter of fact, he didn't grab any in the Winston Cup in 653 starts, but his victories were all from the heart. He raced with passion, determination, and was a true sports racer. I'm very proud to announce Linda being with us today, and I can hardly wait to hear more about her dad. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I look forward to talking about my favorite subject, my dad.
How sweet is that? I was thinking when I was getting the show ready to go, we should have done it on Father's Day instead of almost Mother's Day, but that's all right.
That's fine.
Hey, I hear, before we get into your dad, I hear that you're quite familiar with my province of British Columbia. That's kind of cool. I don't often get people that know anything about it. Most time people don't even know where it is.
Well, actually, I did a lot of traveling with a job I had a while back, and I traveled throughout the U.S. and Canada and collected highway information to update maps, actually. And I've seen some beautiful parts of British Columbia. They're Canada. I went up into the Yukon, you know, Northwest Territories, all that.
Oh, how cool is that? I mean, I have been across Canada multiple times, but I can tell you lots of people haven't. So for you to travel to all those places, I mean, wow, how cool is that? You must have had some great stories. You could probably hear them for days.
Yeah, well, most of the stories I probably can't tell you.
yeah, probably not, but that's okay. We'll imagine. But yes, I do live in a beautiful spot, and I've been across Canada multiple times too, so I'm totally with you on that page, and I love it up here. And it's nice to finally talk to somebody who actually knows where it is. I was at Bristol recently with Buddy, and we ran into the owner of Levine Family Racing, Bob Levine, and him and his wife had just been up in my area visiting all the multiple wineries we have up here. There's about 250 or so of them in my area. I'm sandwiched between two of them. So, of course, I'm a raging alcoholic. But with fine taste.
I love wine, right?
Absolutely. I love nothing better
than... Canada has some great beers, too.
Oh, they do. Yes, we've got a couple breweries here. Really good one. Okanagan Springs Brewery has been around for a long time.
Yeah, I had a friend up in Toronto that lived right outside of Toronto, and she's like, Linda, your American beers are watered down.
Yeah, that they are.
And I'm like, yeah, you're right, because Canadian beers are much better, I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, I hope if you ever get up this way again, you'll pop in, and we'll get you one of those craft beers up on our deck, and you can admire the view, and I'll join you in a glass of wine or a beer. I like beer, too.
I would love that.
Oh, it's so pretty here, and it's really good. I'm so excited to have you on. J.D. McDuffie is, you know, I love old stuff about racing, and he was a true grit racer. How old? I noticed he started in 63. How old were you when he started racing, or were you even born yet?
Actually, I was born in 64.
Ah,
but I saw a lot, you know, I saw a lot of the dirt track. He raced a lot of dirt track. That's where he started.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was, very successful at the dirt track.
Yeah, it seems like he was much better at dirt than he was on asphalt, though, you know, I mean, he had lots of top tens. I mean, I think he had 106 of them or something, which is significant.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that he would have had a lot more success in NASCAR if they would have chosen to, you know, to help him out a little bit with the sponsorship money and stuff like that.
Right.
It's really political.
It is. It is. It always was, always has been, always will be, I think.
Well, yeah. And, you know, racing back then is not the same. It's the same as it is today.
No.
You know, I enjoyed it back then. I don't really follow it that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I find it to be
sterile.
It's so money driven.
It is,
and they've kind of forced out that base that they created.
Mm-hmm.
Base of fans that they've created, and you know the sportsmanship is just to me is amazing. You know, I've told people before, I was like, I'm sure my dad's probably rolled over a couple of times with the poor sportsmanship that shown.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure him and Tiny Lund and all the ones that came before feel the same way. I mean, it has changed a lot. It's a lot more sterile. And, you know, your dad was famous for talking to people after the race and working with other race car drivers. And he loved the fans and would sign autographs till he was blue in the face. But you won't see that much anymore these days.
Yeah, exactly. I can't express enough how much he loved his fans. They were very important to him. And, you know, there were times that's what kept him going. And after, you know, he died, you know, and that was reflected in the letters that we received from fans. Some of them were just amazing.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, let me first say too, I'm sorry for his loss. I guess it's coming up on 26 years this year. Wow. It's hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah. It's for me, you know, it seems like yesterday.
Oh, I bet it does. Did you go to the track with him all the time?
I did go a lot when I was younger. Once I got, you know, 16, you know, teenager.
Yep.
I didn't go as much, but, you know, I always tried to follow what he was doing, so...
Do you still keep in touch with Marty Burke?
Marty is a touchy subject.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can blop that out if you want.
Oh, no. Marty tries to take credit for my dad's career, and he had nothing to do with it.
Oh.
If anyone that I respected and admired and that I loved to death and my whole family loved him was Tom Rumble.
Oh.
And I think that is the person that should be remembered.
Is he still
Marty,
around?
No, Mr. Rumble died. I think about 8 or 10 years ago.
What's his significance?
Excuse me?
What's his significance to you?
Well, he actually helped my dad out. And he's the one that was there when no one else was. And, you know, Mr. Rumpel respected my dad, and my dad just loved him. And, you know, if anyone remembers anything, they should remember Rumpel Furniture. That's what they should remember. They shouldn't remember Classic Trophies.
Right.
For sure.
He sponsored him right up to the end, didn't he? He helped him out financially.
Mr. Rumpel?
Yes.
He didn't do it up until the end. There was a point where I think he stopped, but Daddy still put his name on the car, but he was just an incredible human being. If Dad called him and needed some help for something, he helped.
Hmm. Did he help him at all with the mechanics of the car? I know your dad built all his own stuff, and he occasionally would get parts and loaners from other people, but for the most part, he did his own, right?
Oh, he did everything on his own. He built the engines. He, you know, did the body work. You know, he set up the car. You know, whatever calibrations needed to be done. He did all that. And I think that's, I think that's lost on some people exactly how hard he actually worked and what he accomplished. In the years that he raced.
Well, and he made enough money to support your mom and your brother Jeff. Now, didn't Jeff also race a little bit as well?
He did. He actually raced a few races with my dad in Winston Cup.
Right, and how did that go?
And my brother, you know, he actually started on the dirt tracks too.
Hmm. Sliding sideways on the cushion, right in the cushion.
That's right. That's right.
But I'm assuming he doesn't have anything to do with NASCAR anymore, your brother.
No, you know what? He doesn't. He's never had the drive that my dad did. You know, I always tell people that I should have been the boy. Because when it comes to, you know, work and things like that, you know, I'm driven. I'm out to do the best I can. He was out to do the best he could with what he had. And, you know, he was a winner all the way. And I am like that.
Well, that's good. That's always good traits, and I always say the same thing about my dad. I inherited more of his work ethic than I did of anything else. But and that's what, you know, fathers and daughters sometimes have a pretty special bond, and it must have been hard for you when he was killed.
Oh yeah, it was just devastating to me. It was, you know, I found out and everything. It was just...
How did you find out?
Actually, I had been home to North Carolina, and a friend went with me. I had went up there to see his father, my granddaddy, and he was not doing well, and they didn't expect him to live much longer. And, you know, little did I know, you know, it wasn't my granddad, you know, so I'm driving back, at the time I lived in Florida, So I'm driving back to Florida, and I never, ever listen to races on the radio. But for some reason, this day, we tuned in to hear it, and they had mentioned the accident and who it was. And, you know, from when they mentioned it, you know, it was like life left my body. Because I knew he was gone.
No.
And so I just basically found out, you know, listening to the radio, it was, you know, it was
tough.
It's just like yesterday. I can, you know.
You could still feel
it's
it.
Hard to, yeah, I mean, I, you know, I I'm not ashamed to say I still cry.
Oh, gosh. You know? And you should never be ashamed of that, girl. Never.
Exactly.
I just feel bad for making you cry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Oh, no. No. You know, I love talking about my dad, especially with people who understand his place in NASCAR history.
Oh.
He should have, I mean, you know, he should be in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And, you know, I know that's probably never going to happen, but what he accomplished with what he had and how he did it is amazing.
It is.
And a lot of people just don't understand that.
No, they don't. And I hear sometimes on current races, there's people like Mike Harmon, for instance, and we've interviewed Mike, and he's a good friend of our show, and they'll say, what's he doing out there? You know, he's just, you know, he stays out of the way. He doesn't make anybody any trouble, and why can't he be out there? You know, he's trying to make a buck like your dad was to support a family. He's working on his vehicle himself. You know, same thing, right? Those kind of people are disappearing on these big budget teams, and I think we're losing the redneckedness, if you like, as a word, of the racing, because people don't have a bond. They can't cheer for the underdog because there is no underdogs.
Well, yeah, and people don't understand that underdog. You know what I mean?
No, they don't.
They don't understand what drives them to do what they do. And, you know, my dad was I'm still amazed when I think about it. I'm sorry, I'm a loss for words, but I'm still amazed at what he accomplished with what he had to go against. People need to understand that if it weren't for people like my dad, the J.D. McDuffies, the Dean Daltons, the Henley Grays, the John Sears, you know, people that drivers that no one probably has no clue about, the Baxter Price, you know, those guys made a field back when they were begging people to come to a race back, you know, in the 60s and the 70s. No one's going to go to a race and watch five cars drive around a track.
That's right. And your dad wasn't a so-called starting park either. I mean, NASCAR frowned on that back in the day, and they liked to have a good full field of guys that actually raced and beaten and banging and going for the trophy. That was what it was all about back then.
Yeah, exactly. But what you don't know is they were begging people to come to make a full field.
Yes, they were. They were. And Ned,
yeah.
We had Ned Jarrett on the show one time, and he told us that, too. He said, yeah, NASCAR would go out, and if somebody didn't have enough bucks to, you know, or the car wasn't quite ready, or, you know, any number of things, they would either lend them money or borrow something for, you know, they're always bashing NASCAR, but they don't know a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff where they helped out so many guys like that. just to race, just so they would have 40 or 50 or 60 cars in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting compared to what it is today. And, you know, NASCAR is built on the back of those drivers that I mentioned that no one knows.
Yeah, we try and bring them to life. We dig deep into the 60s a lot of times to interview people so that people can get an understanding of what it was like back then. I mean, your dad raced to put food on the table to feed you guys. When he was killed, there was no money. You know, it dried up. I mean, Smokey Unick was a great advocate of having benefits and stuff like that. And he was after NASCAR all the time trying to get some kind of payment system in for when people got hurt or if they were killed or, you know, anything like that. He was a big proponent of that.
Yeah. And, you know, when my dad died, you know, NASCAR had a small, I'll call it small, very small policy, where he got, you know, insurance. We got insurance money from him being the driver and him being the owner. And I'd like to make clear, my dad was the owner of his car.
Yes. Yes.
And so it was, I mean, when I found out how much it was, I was dumbfounded. You know, NASCAR did very little to help us after he died. I know we filed a lawsuit, but they didn't really do anything. I remember walking into the house after he died. I'll tell you one thing NASCAR did for me, not my dad, for me. They actually flew me in their private plane to North Carolina. They did more for me in that one situation than they did all my dad's career for him. Which I appreciate. I'm not ungrateful. I appreciate that. But, you know, I remember walking into a house and on the sitting on top of the microwave was a small flower arrangement. And I mean small. And it was from NASCAR. And that's all we got.
Oh, dear.
I literally had to fight for, since my dad was the owner and the driver.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave him, okay, you're the driver, right? So they sent that money, but I had to actually call them and say, hey, you have insurance policies on owner and driver. My dad was the owner. He deserves that money. What little it was. And so I basically, they agreed to it eventually, and the money was sent to my mom.
But a long time coming.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is so much people don't know. I mean, it's amazing.
Go ahead and tell us.
Well, so, and after, this was in the paper. I don't know, the local, regional, I'll say, paper. So after my dad died, his car, right, was taken by Marty Burke and Sons Alto. I can't remember his name at this point.
Marty Burke claim that that was his car that your dad had sold to him to race our car or something, and that he let him run it because his other two cars were smashed up or something?
That's what he claims, but that is so far from the truth.
Oh.
And what I understand is that the race before Watkins Glen Pocono, see, Marty wanted to drive the car. And my dad, he wanted to drive the car in the Bush series.
Mm-hmm.
And he said no. And so...
Your dad said no, or...
My dad said no.
He didn't want to race in the lower league?
He didn't want Marty Burke he didn't want Marty Burke to drive his car. He had no experience. He had no driving experience. And, you know, my dad had, I don't want to say very little, but he couldn't afford to let somebody who doesn't know how to drive
No.
race his car.
No, that would make no sense.
Well, thank you.
Especially because your dad was in perfectly good health at that time, too, wasn't he?
My dad was, my dad was healthy as a horse. I have his, this is really sad. I have his autopsy report. I have a copy of that. And, you know, he was healthy as a horse, except for the fact that his, you know, mandible was pushed up through his skull. There was nothing else wrong with that man. And I've heard, you know, Marty Burke trying to take credit for my dad's career, and that is my dad made his own decisions, and he did it his way, not Marty Burke's way. And, you know, I think that karma, I believe in karma. What comes around goes around. And he will, you know, he will account for things he's done.
That's
just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I read an article that he was interviewed, and he said that he began working for your dad in 85. He says that he did everything but be a jackman on the car, is what the article says.
Well, he might have worked for the pit. He worked on the pit crew, but
mm-hmm.
I would have to check 85 because I don't think he was around in 85.
Ah.
And I would have to see that. You know, I've read articles to where that I found online that he was like, oh, well, what? You know, people were asking him, why didn't JD do this? And he was like, well, we decided. I'm like, what? And my dad, I'm serious. You didn't mess with his race car. You didn't mess with him. That was his livelihood. He didn't listen to Marty Burke.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to take credit for it. So I just think that, you know, after he died, they took the car. back to their place. And I never got to see that car. And the only thing I wanted was to sit in that car, because I needed that
for your own sanity.
Yeah, and
you just needed to say goodbye to him, I think, maybe, hey?
Yeah, I never got that chance. And it still affects me to this day.
Now, you say they took the car. Marty took the car, or NASCAR took the car? Because I know that they were concerned about that tire that broke off the spindle, and that he'd lost brakes and steering, and that the tire had disappeared as well. Is that a true story?
Oh, that is absolutely true. I was told by, at the time, I was talking to Les Richter. He's no longer, he's deceased, but I was talking to Les Richter, and he was like, and I was asking him those questions. I'm like, well, where's the tire? Well, because of the tire still had the ball joint and everything connected to it. And he told me, oh, well, we put it inside the race car. And I'm like, I just kind of looked at him and said, you can't get that in the window of a race car. You know, so there was deception on NASCAR's part, definitely, because, let me make something clear. My dad would probably not have died if it hadn't have been for that fence. I mean, a steel post went inside that car and killed him. That's what killed him. That's what people don't know. They think that, oh, he just hit and died. No, he didn't just hit and die. He was killed by a steel post from that fence. And I have proof that the fence was not up to specifications.
Wow.
And I literally, after this happened, I was so numb about everything. I went to, I had a friend of mine that I work with. I said, look, I said, I want you to call these newspapers that are local around Watkins Glen. I said, I want you to get everything you can, all the articles that have to do with Watkins Glen. So she did, and I got the articles. And I mean, if the articles actually were, a few of them were before he died, saying how dangerous that corner was. And so I literally sent those articles to the lawyer. And he's like, and they were like, how did you get these? I'm like, yeah, you're a lawyer, right? You should know this. So I got all that, and I can, the fence was not up to specifications. Look at it now. I mean,
right, that corner is not even there anymore. Not really.
Exactly.
I mean, it's gone. I mean,
there's just, just so much. And, I've learned a couple other things in the past couple of months. I went to NASCAR after he died to pick up his helmet. And I found it really hard to believe that someone who hung upside down and lost almost every ounce of blood in his body, and there was no blood in his helmet.
Really?
Yeah. So figure that one out.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
Exactly.
I mean, they reported it as a basilar skull fracture, right? And I think something about his upper arm was broken or something. But that's all that I read for injuries. I read the story about the mandible from your mom's viewpoint at the to do with his hair. But are you saying that there was a different injuries?
No, I'm saying that steel post smacked him in the head, and it basically, even though it hit him in the back, yeah, you're going to have that fracture. But there was absolutely no reason for his mandible to be pushed up through his skull. And I mean, it's in the autopsy report.
So you think the post from the fence hit him, came through the windshield and hit him?
Oh, I know it did. It came in on the passenger side. On the passenger side of the car, I wish I could find the photo, but I just don't know where it's at. There was an area, you know, how the sheet metal just kind of went over the roll cage. Well, that sheet metal on the passenger side, there was a section that perfectly fit a fence post that rolled that under the roll bars. Everything else on that was untouched. It's kind of hard to describe.
No, but I think I understand what you mean. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was rolled under. And wow. I'm sorry, you can't explain that. At least, well, I can explain it, but there's no other explanation.
When he hit that fence, he immediately went up in the air and then flipped over and landed on his roof, right? And his driver's side was facing the tire barrier there, right? So how would that come through the passenger's side? I guess I'm just a little confused with that one.
If you saw the if you look at the video, mm-hmm. He hit on passenger side first, and it flipped. And if you look closely at the fence and those steel posts that are sticking up, then I mean you will basically see one that's not there anymore. I'm not saying that the fence, that piece of post was inside the car, but I'm saying that piece of fence killed my dad. And there was no reason for him to have a broken right arm. None.
You don't think the impact from the drop onto the ground could have broken
Would have broken his arm? No. I mean, why would it not break something else? I mean, if it was that hard, then why didn't it break his other arm? Why didn't it break his leg? What, you know?
Where did all the blood come from if it wasn't in his helmet?
I recently, like I said, the past couple months, I found out that his helmet wasn't on his head like it should have been. Let's just put it that way.
Oh.
And because if the helmet would have been completely on his head, there would be a ton of blood in that helmet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you think so?
You would.
And there wasn't.
No. That's very odd.
Yeah, well, it's odd. You know, it's the things that people don't know. And they don't care because it was just JD. You know what I mean? And I'm saying that lightly, but people didn't care. They didn't want to know. They just thought, oh, he had junk in his car. That's the reason he died. That's not the reason he died.
Race car drivers don't generally have junk in their car. They're pretty good about that. They know if you get into a crash, things go flying through the air. I mean, I don't know a single race car driver. Well, I guess the odd one might have a teddy bear strapped to a roll bar, but that'd be about it.
Yeah, and what I mean by junk is they just thought his car was crap.
Oh, I
see. You know what I mean?
It wasn't built enough. Yeah.
Well, no, there were used parts and, you know, all this, and that's what killed him. That's not what killed him. That is not what killed him. I mean, I just wish people would, you know, would have recognized that back when it happened. You know, I've heard stories of, you know, how they have the radios and everything. It came over, you know, NASCAR has the radios. And someone said it came over the radio that, you know, something went inside that car and killed him. But you don't hear about that because nobody cared because it was JD.
Oh, that's sad. I guess they're protecting themselves from a lawsuit, right? Because if that fence was faulty and killed him, then that would be a lawsuit.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we filed a lawsuit, and, you know, I don't think they went at the lawsuit correctly. I understand race car drivers getting a race car, and they understand about the you know,
possibility.
Risk.
Right. Yeah. They sign waivers. Yeah.
Yeah. But when you have someone who died because of a faulty fence, but yet the judge basically said, oh, well, you know, he knew the risk. I'm sorry. He knew the risk. Every race car driver that gets in a car knows the risk that they could die on any given day.
Well, sure. But that's partly what fuels them. It's their adrenaline rush of that, right? Part of it.
You know, and if my dad was so concerned about, you know, if my dad was, or any race car driver for that fact, if they're scared they're going to die that day, they have no business in a race car.
Yeah, exactly. None. Exactly. And that's well documented by all drivers say that. Sometimes the media asks them, are you scared? And it's like, really? Why do you even ask them that question? That's a stupid question.
Well, yeah, exactly. It pretty much is. You know, and not only did We never saw a race car. So after he died, someone called the sheriff's office. Actually, I think this guy got in a little, he got in some kind of trouble. I can't remember exactly. But he called the sheriff's office saying, "Hey, I'm JD's brother. Ship me his suit and shoes and, you know, goggles and all that stuff." Well, not the goggles, because the goggles were different. So they sent it to him without any type of verification or anything. So, I mean, we had people, I mean, coming out of the woodwork left and right. The sheriff sent that, his suit and his shoes and his socks to himself. And eventually it was recovered. We do have the suit now. But, I mean, there were a lot of, bad people.
Did that surprise you that so many vultures would come out of the woodwork for, at a time like that? You were what, in your early 20s?
I was 26.
Okay, sorry, mid-20s. So that's a lot to deal with at that age.
I was in a lot of therapy. But, you know, after a while, it was like, wow, people are just, devious. You know, we had people that would hold these events, right, to raise money for the family, and never saw a penny of it.
You didn't see any? I read all kinds of things of money being raised. You saw nothing?
Not all of it, but I'm saying there were people who did that. I mean, my mom even, one guy had the nerve to send my mom a picture of him with all this cash. I mean, it was all cash, sitting on the floor. And money that was raised for us, never saw a penny of it. Never.
Oh, my God. I mean, what the heck's wrong with the world?
Well, yeah.
That's sad. That's very sad. How did your mom even survive? I mean, she was, in her 50s, I guess, at that time?
Yeah. My mom was actually same age as my dad, 52.
Oh, okay. How did she survive all this?
Good question. You know what? We had such a hard time dealing with stuff and the things that people were doing, and my mom actually, after he died, so we got a agent who basically helped us, get contracts for making, like, have you seen any of his racing champion cars and things like that in the Matchbox?
Yes, I have, actually. I've seen them on eBay.
Yeah. And so we had an agent for that, and he got us, he helped us out as far as getting those contracts and, you know, getting my mom some money for, you know, support. You know, I think it's sad that, you know, he had to die to get that. I think that's where society is really, really messed up.
Is she still alive?
Yes, she is, actually. Yep.
And what is she doing?
Well, I mean, she still lives in Sanford.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. We still lives in Sanford, and you know, she still calls, and you know, we still talk about those things, and you know, I just don't think, you know, there's proper closure for any of us from what happened.
What would give you closure? The car?
The car, the acknowledgement, you know, that my dad didn't have a crappy car and that's why he died. That's probably two of the biggest things. You know, my dad wasn't a stupid man. He taught himself everything. I mean, you have to understand, everything he did on his own. He didn't do it with someone telling him what to do. You know, he learned to build the engine. He learned to calibrate. He learned to set up a car. He learned all these things. You know, just acknowledgement. But, you know, I'll never get that because NASCAR will never admit that, you know, they were basically at fault. And I know some people probably will disagree with me on that.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear them admit, though, that, you know, they are struggling to figure out whether to try and keep getting these young people interested without offending the old people like me that have been watching NASCAR my whole life. And one of the things that a lot of people like is the history and knowing about guys like JD and how hard they worked and what they sacrificed. I mean, your dad probably works 7 days a week, I would think. Speaking of that, Buddy has joined us, and I just wanted to bring him in on this because I know this is something that he is also very fond of, like myself, is that very thing. Welcome, Buddy. I'm glad you could make it.
Yeah, I've had an interesting afternoon, but I made it. I'm sorry I'm late.
No, that's okay. We had a little problem at the beginning, but we're good now. And I know Linda was hoping you would arrive. So there you go. Now you two can meet.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, buddy.
How are you?
Good.
I had to go pick my wife up from work, and it's thunderstorming really bad here. There was a crash on the freeway. We were stuck.
Is it Friday the 13th or a full moon today?
It must be. Is it the 13th?
It's the 12th, actually. So it's
oh, okay.
It's on the cusp. Maybe it's just teasing us. You know, tell us a story about your dad at the 88 Daytona. Somebody had ripped off his gloves, stolen his gloves from him, and he got... you know, he wasn't a cause of an accident. He just got caught up in a fiery wreck and burnt his hands very badly. How did he even function with those burnt hands?
He was driven. You know, it was, you know, yeah, somebody actually stole his gloves out of the car before that race. And when that accident happened, that the oil cooler in the car, oh my God, I can't even remember, broke loose, and it sprayed oil all over him. He had, you know, third-degree burns on his hand, and he had some burns to his legs. You know, he may have been laying in a hospital bed for a month, or I can't remember exactly how long it was, but there was no doubt in anyone's mind that he wouldn't be back in that car. It was extremely painful to see, because, you know, with those third-degree burns on his hands, he always said that, you know, he'd start work in the morning and they were stiff. And then as he worked, they got a little bit better, you know, to where it was better. And then, you know, he'd get up the next morning and they'd be stiff again. So, you know, he had a hard time with that. I mean, you look at somebody like him that was so passionate about racing and, you know, what he loved to do. And, you know, looking at that, it just broke my heart. I went to see him when he was in the hospital. And, yeah, that's something I'll never forget either. But he made it through. People thought he wouldn't, you know, race again. And, you know, after that, he didn't make a lot of races, but you know what? He kept trying. You know, he made races where people with $1 million sponsors didn't. You know, so there must have been something, you know, doing right. But, you know, he loved racing. That's what he wanted to do. He died doing it. I'm not sure that kind of gives me some, you know, a peace of mind that he's doing what he loved. But, you know, they're just not, I don't see there's not drivers like that anymore.
I know Buddy's got some fan questions. You may think JD's forgotten, but he's not. And I know Buddy's got a whole ton of questions from the fans. So let me let him ask you some of those.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I would love to answer.
Have you spoken to Jimmy Means at all since the crash?
No, I would love to. I think it's in February. They used to have a bowling tournament before they had the, you know, during that week of the race. And my dad always went. He always enjoyed engaging with the fans and, you know, just talking to them. And so after he died, they had this little special thing saying, you know, for my dad. And I went. And Jimmy was there. I wanted to talk to him, but there were people telling me I shouldn't. So I didn't get to talk to him. I wish I could talk to him.
Why would people even say that? I mean, that's crazy.
Well, I think people thought that I thought he was responsible. He wasn't responsible.
Oh, goodness, no.
You know?
That yeah, wasn't, that I was mean, quite clear.
Yeah, I mean, so they were like, no, Linda. And I was like, okay. And I'm not going to mention the, I don't want to mention the people who were there telling me that.
Oh.
Because they're well known. You know, so they just kind of discouraged me from doing that. And I probably, to this day, I regret it. It's not like I wanted to go over there and disrespect him in any way. I just wanted to ask him questions.
Well, sure. And he's, you know? He's a connection to your dad. So,
yeah. Who was your father closest to in his racing years? Which driver was he buddies with?
Oh, wow. You know what? I'm not sure he was buddy-buddy with anybody, but, I mean, he talked to all the drivers. One of the last pictures I have, or my mom has, is someone took a picture of him and Dale Earnhardt standing in the garage talking. He didn't really, I don't think he really had the closeness, but he, with a lot of the drivers, but I mean, he was always talking to the drivers, and it always amazes me that, you know, people always like, oh, did your dad know, you know, Dale Earnhardt? Did he know Richard Petty? And I'm like, yeah. You know, he talked to them. You know, he communicated with them. They talked about racing. I mean, but people don't understand that. So I'm not sure who he was the closest with, but I know he talked to Dale quite a bit.
Another one was, did he receive any help from any of the larger teams of his era? Your dad's career spanned a large era there.
As far as sponsorship?
Any kind of, you know, parts, anything.
Oh, from the driver? Yeah, I mean, you know, like, there was one time, I think it was Daytona. I don't remember what year, but, you know, my dad blew an engine, and Dale raised money to help him to get a new engine. So, you know, those drivers were always, some of the top drivers, always like tires. If he needed tires, you know, he could basically break them in, you know. So, I mean, there was a lot of help behind the scenes that people don't know about. But, you know, he appreciated everything they did for him.
In that NASCAR Winston Cup group that Shannon mentioned, there's been a lot of talk about the Hall of Fame adding categories. And one of the categories would be independence. Your father was probably one of the longest running and most beloved independent drivers ever by the fans. How would you feel about NASCAR incorporating that idea into the Hall of Fame of adding an independent category for, say, your father, Dave Marcus, and others?
Well, I would love that. I think they should at least have him nominated. It doesn't matter if he was an independent or not. He contributed a lot to the sport, and I would love to see that. And I would hope that he would be on the top of that list, because, you know, he was the last of the true independents when he died. And if they're doing that, I would love it. I would love people write in, tell them, you know, that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And he does.
I think that would be a good category, but he makes a good point there with the independents. Because they had to work, 10 times harder than everybody else with all that money. So, I mean, that does need to be recognized somehow, because they were they're just as much a part of the sport as the Jeff Gordons and Dale Earnhardt Juniors are of today. I mean, there's no difference there.
If it weren't for the men like my dad, NASCAR wouldn't be what it is today.
No,
it was like I was saying earlier, the John Sears, the Henley Grays, the Dean Daltons, Baxter Price, those guys were the independents. Those guys are the ones that drove NASCAR to what it is today, but nobody understands that and nobody appreciates that.
I disagree with you there, and I will tell you that lots of people do. Maybe you feel like that because they don't maybe tell you, but there's lots of people out there that appreciate that stuff.
Yeah, go check out that group sometimes. If you find pictures of your father and other people that you just mentioned, the comments in them, people absolutely loved them.
They did. Yeah.
And do remember them and remember them.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for those people who really understand what he meant to the sport. I really am. And like I said before, he really loved his fans.
And he was partially responsible along with, some others that unfortunately lost their lives due to these kinds of fractures. I mean, the Hans device and some of the safety devices today are as a result of people like your dad who paid that ultimate sacrifice. So that in itself, you should be proud of in an indirect way, maybe, but it's something that has moved forward because of that.
Oh, absolutely. And I thank you for realizing that, as not a lot of people do.
Oh, no, they do. They do. And you may be moving in circles where you don't be aware of this, but lots of people attribute a lot of safety things today to people like your dad. And that group Buddy mentioned, those guys in there are very knowledgeable about the history of the sport. And sometime if you're feeling a little down, go on in there and Buddy will send you the link, and that'll certainly make you realize that your dad was loved and appreciated a great deal.
Oh yeah. I started a Facebook page for him. It took me a long time, but the comments that I get, I'm just so grateful and appreciative of that respect that they had for him. And you know what? I will never forget. I really appreciate it. I really do.
If you have interest, I can add you to those groups. But I wanted to touch on something you said earlier about NASCAR admitting blame. You're never going to get that. I think the most you're going to get is, like we were just talking about, the safety innovation of adding the bus stop at Watkins Glen to slow them down through that section where his accident happened.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I could tell you a story where I walked into Les Richter's office, and we were talking, and on his wall, he had big photos of different tracks. One of them happened to be Watkins Glen. And I was like, I sit there and I looked at it. And I went back again, probably a little later to pick up his helmet. And that photo was no longer there. So NASCAR knows exactly what happened to him. They just didn't respect him enough to do anything except for, put the chicane in the track and actually put the fence up to spec.
Well, that and all those things are improvements and probably save countless lives in the future. So there is something positive out of the negativity there, I suppose. Before we wind you up, can you tell me what the happiest moment with your dad was in regards to racing that you two shared?
Yeah, I can. I think it was back in 79 when he was racing at Nashville, and he led like 112 laps. This was our thing. I would always go over to his shop and help him with anything he needed, whether, washing parts, whatever. Whatever he needed, I would do it. And actually, that engine that he built, I helped him build. I didn't do anything that required calibration, of course, but I always joked with him. I'm like, I can build an engine better than you. So we always had that little laugh. And there was another time when we were in Daytona Beach, and of course we both got on the go-karts, and I ended up basically putting him in the wall.
That wasn't very nice.
I spun him out. And so, when we got off the track, he, put his arm around me. He said, "My own daughter spun me out," kind of thing. So I remember those small things that were, special to me.
And he was probably pretty proud to have you hanging out with him all the time. I'm sure he showed you off lots.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was over at his shop a lot, just helping him out. He needs, parts washed, whatever he needed. I would do it if he needed me. And, I really missed that.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you have those fond memories, though, to look back on. And sometimes that's the thing. You have to look at the positivity to get yourself through perhaps tougher times, and know that your dad was well loved by the fans, and he still is. And lots of people will listen to this show, and I'll make sure I'll post it on your page for you so you can listen to it too. And I just really want to thank you for bearing your soul. I know that probably wasn't an easy conversation, and you were very honest and upfront, and you didn't give me any of the NASCAR psycho babble, which I appreciated, and I know I know Buddy did too, and wished he was here for the whole thing, but he'll go back and listen to it anyway. And do you have anything to wind up there with, Bud?
No, I just want to tell you, I still love and appreciate your father. I'll never forget the day I was watching that race. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on, and I do look forward to listening to the majority of the show.
Yeah.
That I missed.
Yes.
So will this be posted to your website?
Yeah, probably, but we'll put it right on your own page. And in Facebook, we have a Happy Hour Radio page that you can join. We post it all over the place, but I'll see if I can post it right on your page, or Buddy will for you, and also through SoundCloud. And it's also on happyhourgarage.com.
And it'll be in those groups we talked about as well.
Oh, yeah, we put it all over the place, and on Twitter, too.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, we really appreciate talking to you. It was quite interesting, and I know we've kept you longer than we probably should. Your ears probably sore and hand from holding your phone, and I appreciate that. I know that's a tough one, and if I could, I'd give you a great big hug.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, and, you know, I enjoy talking about my dad. You know, he's my hero. He's my role model. He's everything.
Oh,
so
I can relate to that. My dad is the same for me. You had that.
Yeah, and I have to tell you one thing I should tell you if you got time.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
I don't know if you guys remember the car that he raced the night before.
Yes, that's right. He won a celebrity race, didn't he?
Exactly.
I meant to actually bring that up because he was racing, wasn't he racing against Dale Earnhardt's crew and all that? And he won that race up in New York at Owego. I'm not sure if I'm saying that.
Shangri-La,
yeah. Speedway. Yeah. There you go.
I was blessed enough to actually drive that race car.
You were.
And yes, they invited us up to Watkins Glen and Shangri-La Raceway. And oh my God, the people up there just loved him to death because he was just so kind and, you know, open. But yeah, I got to drive that race car.
Ooh. Did you have aspirations for racing yourself?
You know what? I did, but my dad would not allow me to do anything without him.
Mm.
And so that was kind of hard when he raced every week.
Yeah.
You know. So, but we grew up, you know, doing the go-karts, motorcycles, all that stuff. So, but yeah, that was real special for me to be able to drive that car that, you know, he had driven that night before. And yeah, that was just something very special to me.
He put a beating on that field too, I seem to recall.
Oh, he did.
Stunk the whole thing up. Good on him. And what a great memory for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if you guys know this, but there's someone that's writing a book, but it's not, you know, full story. So I think he said it was coming out in July of 2018. So I've talked to him. It's Brock Beard.
Oh, yeah. I saw his name somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's writing a feel good book, you know, not writing all the other stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes that part is good to be told. Not everybody, sometimes people don't like to know the bad stuff because it taints their memory, right? And they, you know, they say it's like if somebody's dying and you go visit them in the hospital when they look horrible, that's what you remember them by instead of remembering all the good stuff. So you know, maybe there's a value in that as well, I think, for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I totally get that.
Yeah.
You know, just sometimes I think that we need to tell all the stories that my mom knows.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, she could tell you some stories that probably, you know, make your ears curl.
We should have got her on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you tell her if she ever decides to unveil them, we'd be happy to hear them.
Okay. I really appreciate y'all talking to me and letting me talk about my dad.
Oh, no, and no problem. The pleasure was all ours. Thank you very much.
You know, Shannon, I was just thinking, you know, that we're in Kansas, and since we've recorded a show, the news has came out that our friend Bruce Hill is battling cancer.
Right.
I just want to ask all of our fans to send him your thoughts, prayers, good vibes, whatever you do. He's fighting the battle and hopefully winning it. Last I saw, he's going through radiation right now. He's having a pretty tough time.
Yes, I've been reading a bit about that. And he, you know, I one thing I will say about that is, I mean, we all have cancer somewhere with somebody close to us and know how awful it is. But, you know, on one hand, when we interviewed him there after that Darlington throwback race, and he was so thrilled with that whole thing, it kind of, you know, I kind of smile that we were able to get that to the fans, that enthusiasm he had for that. And yeah, we send prayers his way for sure. And we hope that he fights it along with John Andretti as well and Robert Yates, who is coming to the end of, if not is at the end of his chemo. Yeah, horrible, bad. I hate cancer. It sucks.
Yes, it does.
Well, hopefully in our next show, we will have our co-host back, Maureen, as well as you. And she's going through some times herself. So, no, she doesn't have cancer. Don't panic. Just some family things. So, but hopefully she'll be back in business again, and we'll carry on as usual.
Definitely. Look forward to it. Our next guest is going to be a very special one.
It is. And oh, before we sign off, I just want to say what a ball I had with you at Bristol. It was great. I wish I could have met my friend, Drunk Brian. I will next time. And we had a great time. And it was, you're a wonderful host, you and your lovely wife, Crystal. And Q and I had a marvelous time. What fun we had.
Sweet Caroline, Shannon. Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, exactly. All right, then. Well, from the Happy Hour Garage, thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed hanging out in the Happy Hour Garage. Thanks for tuning in. Please join Shannon and Maureen next week for another episode of NASCAR News, interviews, and stories. Check out our website at www.happyhourgarage.com for our previous shows and see what's coming up next.